Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grovecast needs your support, so please head over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast to find out what cool stuff you get for as little as 17 cents a day. Yes, only 17 cents a day gets you some amazing stuff. Thank you so much for your support. Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you're living in 1863, Walnut Grove was a place to be. If you're living in 1863, talking this season. How are you doing, Susan?
I'm awesome. Hi, Walnut Grovecast listeners. We are thrilled to be with you once again.
Yes. And as with most things, we have an exciting episode for you right now. This particular episode was an episode that is one of my favorites from when I was.
Oh, really? Yes. Okay, good.
No, they're all my favorites. No,
that's my line.
No. This episode is genuinely the embodiment of what I like about Little House on the Prairie, and that's the technology. It brings you to another level. It takes you outside of the normal realm of Plum Creek.
Yes, and, absolutely.
And it brings you into the rest of the world. I think sometimes as fans of Little House on the Prairie, we watch the show and we forget that the rest of the country was going on. This is World's
yes.
Fair time. The World's Fair was going on at this time, right?
That's right. We get to visit Chi-Town.
Yeah. Well, you're blowing it. All right. Yeah. No. The episode is entitled Times of Change. And do you want to tell us about the specifics of when this aired, Susan?
I am happy to do that. This is season 4, episode 2, and it aired September 19th, 1977, directed by Bill Claxton and written by the fabulous team of Carol and Michael Rachella. And a very polite title on this one, Times of Change. We could have called this episode Paw and the Fancy Painted Lady,
like,
or Mary Gets Dumped, or we could have called it.
I do not like this episode title. It is
I
too
don't really
close.
Either.
It's too similar to Times Are Changing Part 1 and 2.
Oh, I had forgotten about that. Yeah, you're right.
Well, I don't forget about things. Okay? No, but it really is. It's too close to it, because I think when you first brought it up, I'm like, I think we covered that already. I'm not sure if actually we covered it, but I'm thinking that's a two-parter. Like, what are you talking about? You know, it's like, that sounds like a lot more work.
Nope.
No. So yeah, I forgot about this episode actually recently. I always knew about the bubblegum reference. I always remember the fountain that seems to be right in the middle of this episode. And the dramatics that are surrounding this episode. And like I said, this is one of my favorite episodes. For one of the reasons of it, really kind of makes you see how the rest of the country is growing a little bit. I couldn't figure out where, like, whether this was shot on a set that was just probably right there. Like,
oh,
do you,
I would
did you
imagine.
Find anything?
Yeah, I think it's just a back lot somewhere.
Or maybe they recreated Chicago.
I don't know.
So we have a letter comes from Mary. And I think what's interesting about Mary getting a letter here is the way Pa gives her a certain level of privacy that I don't think we've seen very often.
Yeah. Usually the whole family would gather around with, you know, cookies or Diddy Moore beef stew or whatever. Read us right. a letter, Mary.
Right. Like, did you draw any pictures? You know. Right.
Read us a new poem.
Right. It's another long poem. So so I'm going to play this clip, but how old is Mary supposed to be here? 16, 15 maybe?
No, I think she's probably getting close to, let's see, she was, I'm not going to say the wrong numbers this time. She was 13 and a half when John proposed to her and they were building the cabin and all that jazz. And then he went away to Chicago. She was 13 and a half then. So she's probably 14 and a half really? Because by the time she marries Linwood Boomer, she's 16. So well, she's probably about 14 and a half now.
Oddly enough, I just looked at the dates. This episode aired 1 week before her 14th birthday.
Oh, okay.
In real life. So she was probably about 14, about 13 and a half yeah. when she was filming this.
Yes'm.
So,
Yes'm.
All right, so here's the clip. You threw me off with that one. All right.
Sorry. It's more my little Texas science.
Sure, thanks, Pa. Come on, Carrie. Up.
How's school today, Carrie? All right?
Fine.
Here's your 10 grand, Carrie.
Did you notice the clip? They had to stop filming because Melissa Gilbert was trying to get Carrie up in the carriage and she got stuck. Yeah, she got her feet up there and she couldn't push her up the rest of the way.
Right. It was like weird.
So all of a sudden, boom, Carrie's in the wagon. I noticed that every time I watch this episode. It's like I said, cut. I can't get her up there.
I didn't notice that until this time.
Wait, Mary. Got a letter for you. From Chicago.
Chicago? It's from John.
Was he shot? There's a lot of crime in Chicago. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's right.
Even though they outlaw guns.
Uh-huh. Well, aren't you going to read it to us?
I don't think that's a reading aloud kind of letter, half fine. John's letters to Mary are kind of personal.
What? Mary almost flies off the back of the thing. She's sitting on some
right.
seed.
Yeah. John's letters are pornographic in nature. She can't read them out. Yeah.
Even Pa's like, I don't even know what that word means.
Right.
Well, I'll bring it to Caroline and we'll read it over some popcorn.
That's exactly right. With butter on it.
Exactly. Real butter.
I'm not going there. Okay, anyway.
So they get home and apparently a free convention is being thrown around.
Yes.
Because Charles
the Grange.
Charles is, I guess, going to represent
his district. His district, that's what he calls it. I'm going to represent my district.
Like, do they choose this by having the tiniest farm or something? I don't really understand why it would be Charles representing the farmers.
Well, because he says when he tells Carolyn that so-and-so, somebody that we've never heard of and we'll never hear from again.
Does he explain this and
sick.
I just didn't pay attention?
Right. Yes, he explains it.
All right. Well, I'm going to just play the clip and hopefully it kind of gets covered. I zoned out with a lot of the details having to do with this episode.
I hear you.
Mary won the essay contest at school.
Well, well. Nerd. Congratulations, Mary.
Thanks, Ma.
She doesn't seem very excited about it.
She got a letter from Chicago.
Oh, how's John?
Who knows? It's still Mary's secret.
Oh.
I have a little secret of my own, too.
Oh, what's your secret?
As you know, the Grange's going to meet in 2 weeks to decide state regulation. And since Luther Douglas is sick, I am going to represent the district at the convention.
Oh, Charles! Oh, I mean, the Grange! Oh.
The Grange.
Wow, man, you think they just won $1 million. I mean,
but
I've
you
never
know
heard
what? In all fairness, you know, it's Chicago, and then the World's
yeah.
Fair. I don't know, when did the World's Fair happen there? I should know this. Hold on.
Yes, you should. Shame on you. She says, well, she didn't research it.
World's Fair Chicago. Oh, no. They must have been building it. All right.
Why? Oh. When was it?
I'm not telling you. You can find that all on your own. It's called Google.
Okay.
No, it's it opened on May 1st, 1893.
Okay, and is supposed to be 1887 if we're doing the 100-year rule. So
yeah, because this was like the Westinghouse thing. It was like the electricity. Wasn't Chicago like the big electrical thing? I'm not.
Yeah.
I've read a book called The Devil in White, and that covers a lot of it. Are you familiar with that book by any chance?
No, I'm
not. You
might
enjoy it. It's based on actual, things. It's facts. But what it was a serial killer in Chicago that would lure young girls.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about. The guy with the murder mansion with all the secret hotel or whatever it was with all the secret compartments and stuff.
And you would get girls, women coming to Chicago because it was, it was an exciting place to go, and it was all of that. And, it's one of those type of things. Definitely I think it's called The Devil in the City of White.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
It's going to bother me. Wait, hold on.
Listening to podcasts and all that stuff about it. Yeah, that guy was cuckoo.
The Devil in the White City, that's it.
Alrighty. Well, you were close.
I have an autographed copy for some reason.
Oh.
I think I stole it from the Village Voice library.
Alrighty. When I went there. Okay.
I was like, ooh, this is autographed. I'm stealing this. All right. So we have Mary putting her glasses on and reading the very private letter out loud.
May I attend a performance of Felix Mendelssohn's Songs Without Words? The lilting melodies of the piano reminded me so much of you, my sweet Mary, and the peaceful surroundings of Walnut Grove. Mendelssohn's title no longer seemed appropriate as the music brought words flowing into my mind.
He always writes such sloppy things. Falling in love is such a waste of time. I'm going to stay right here with Pa forever and ever.
Do you want to hear this or not?
Okay.
I'm sorry,
sloppy things.
I love this version of Laura. She's my favorite. We see a different view of the room that we've never seen before.
Yeah.
We've seen them acting in a way that they've never acted before.
Mm-hmm.
Laura's laying in the bed with her shoes on, right? With her feet touching
and kicking
roof.
Her legs and all that stuff.
And
you
see the details of the poorly constructed little house and how you could actually see the outside. And
it's very sisterly to me. It's very realistic. It's like Laura's at that age where she's just like, boys, what really? And Mary's pining away.
I like this scene a lot. I think it's
I
nice.
Do too. It's very genuine.
Annual cotillion. That's a dance on the 14th of this month. Imagine how proud I would be to escort you on such a grand occasion. But I fear that is only a dream.
I didn't know they had doorbells in the little house.
Stop! I came out of my cave for a minute to get something to drink.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you pumping the water thing.
I'm out here in my new kitchen.
Girl? Coming! If I ever got a chance to go to Chicago, I wouldn't waste my time at some dumb old dance.
Smart girl.
That's right. I wouldn't waste my time at some dumb old dance.
It would be a dumb old dance. So,
that's right.
We have a message for the Ingalls girls that is going to get conveyed, and Charles makes this super happy announcement.
Not to make.
Well, I just thought you might be interested to know that I'll be representing Walnut Grove at the Grange Convention next month.
By the way, get a nice view of Carrie's room where they didn't even bother to put plaster on the twigs at this point.
Well, it's just because it's Carrie. Come on.
It's like bugs live in those twigs, and those are Carrie's pets.
We get
a view of twigs above the door that I never noticed before. So I wonder what's going on there. Like why would they choose to make it out of twigs? even on the set, you know.
Well, I don't know.
I have to get Alison Arngrim on the line because she would know.
Yes,
she wouldn't be afraid to tell me.
She would know. She absolutely would know.
But actually, if you're listening to this, I may as well plug our Patreon thing. I want to thank the people who are supporting this show the best they can. And if you visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast, you too can support us financially and help us, you know, continue putting out shows. You also get little perks, like you get the episode a little bit early. Yay, right?
Absolutely.
I'm doing some designs, so I'm going to be printing up some cool little stickers. I don't know if people really care about stickers, but I know I will certainly be putting a sticker on my car.
That's right. You can slap it on your car, have a Walnut Grove mobile. Absolutely.
You never know. You might get pulled over by a cop who might be a fan.
That's right. Super helping you fight your ticket.
Unlikely. But we, or something like a bumper sticker that says, you know, like, I break for Carrie or something.
Or, no. That one would, I don't know.
I break for the mercantile or something. No, so. If you just go over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast, you can find
I agree with Harriet. Now, you see, I'm going to be thinking of all these bumper stickers now.
Yeah, you know what? Do it. Send me some ideas because, I've come up with a lot of cool graphics. I want to create unique graphics that don't infringe upon anybody's copyright, of course. And, I also want to give certain proceeds to Walnut Grovecast centric movements. So for instance, Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum, I want to give a portion of whatever money that is, you know, a portion of the money will end up going into things like that. You know, I just feel as though that's fair. Not just the Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum, but also other things.
Like, oh yeah. As a matter of fact, I just ended up signing up for a $10 a month donation to the Wilder Farm.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because even though I think it was like a year and a half ago or something, I caught this YouTube video, or maybe it was even on Facebook. I can't remember, but it was one that was filmed by Dean Butler, and he was actually there in Malone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking.
And he was, he was signing books or signing something, Little House, something or other. But it was like a promotional video, too, for supporting the farm so that they can, you know, keep it running. Because actually, according to Dean, and I think that it's true that as far as the central figures of the Ingalls Wilder family, that farm and the last home that the Ingalls lived in are the only two last standing. Some of the other things have been rebuilt and recreated, like the little house and stuff, but they're not the original buildings. And I think the farm in Malone, and the last house that the Ingalls lived in when Pa passed away, and then Ma and Mary were living there alone. I think those two structures are the only original Ingalls and Wilder structures that are in existence that haven't been, you know, rebuilt for tourists and stuff.
Well, you know, there's also, if you go to, let me give you an exact address here, walnutgrove.org/store. They have a small store of stuff that you can buy. It's kind of cool. Like, they have a lot of really cute things. But, you know, on the mantelpiece, they actually have in that museum the actual mantelpiece. By the way.
Yes. The China. You're talking about the mantle and the China shepherdess?
Yes. They actually have a casting resin copy that is of the shepherdess so that you can purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm purchasing a couple of those to give away to patrons people who support. Also, they have these slate and pencil sets that say Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum that I want to purchase and give away, and you know, little things like that. So you might, you know, if you can afford, you know, to kind of put some money into the show, you know, very often you might be somebody who gets something back, you know, like physically.
Absolutely. Well,
like a big hug.
And you're right. And I haven't talked about it, but I do have a couple of Little House things that I would be very happy to part with for patrons. So
that would have to go. I would have to figure out a number that you'd be comfortable with, and I would just purchase it. You know?
Oh, whatever. Child, please.
Well, you know what? Maybe we can even do something where we can copy them, and I could autograph them with my name. No, I'm kidding.
Right.
Mark Jacoba.
Who's that? Was he an extra? Who is that?
I was the guy who brought the pita chips.
That's right. Wouldn't do me any good to autograph anything because my signature either looks like a doctor or a serial killer, one of the two. You can't even read my name on mine. I've got a real movie star signature. So.
My wife gets really pissed off at me because I have no patience for really much of anything in this world. So whenever I swipe my credit card, right, it's like, all right, that should be enough. You know what I mean? It's like I swiped it. I even know the code. All right. I even know my zip code.
Wow.
Now you're going to make me sign for it? And it's not even going to look? I literally will take it. I'm a lefty. I will take it with my right hand, just draw a line across. And just,
you are such a brat.
And I just go, it's so stupid, though.
God, no.
It's just, come on already.
I know.
Get over yourself.
I do the same. I'm just like, I don't draw a line, but I'm just like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I could have written Snoopy or Laura Ingalls Wilder, or because you can't read it. My signature is completely illegible and hard to copy.
My signature is an M and a J with a scribble after each letter.
Ah. Well, mine's not even that. It's like Susan L. King, but the S is like a backwards music left, and then the L, and then the blah, blah, blah.
You have to be careful because it might look like an Asian symbol of like a Japanese symbol of hatred or something.
Yeah, true enough.
So yeah, well, sorry. So we you got us off course here. So
yeah, all my fault.
So anyway, just so people know, wannagrove.org/store, you can just order them. They're pretty cheap. The Steward Shepherdess is like $14.50. I would just probably buy 10 so I could just not have to have them shipped. Either way, they do carry a lot of cool stuff. And the people over there, Amy over there, is super amazing. And that's actually where they're going to be holding the reunion. On, I think it's July 7th through the 14th.
Well, it would be so cool if we could go to that and podcast live from there. That would just be a trip.
Yes. We're out live. We have 4 listeners.
Right.
Oh, wait, 3.
Stop.
Yeah.
We could be set up at a table like a radio station like they do when they...
Like a real table, like a table, like the kind you buy for $40 at Home Depot.
Mm-hmm. No, I've got one in my garage. I can throw it in my car and bring it with me.
It there squeaks when you pull the legs down.
Exactly. How did you know?
Because everybody has that table.
Yes, true.
The garage cell table.
All right.
So they have twigs everywhere in their house. I don't understand why you can't just kind of score a little bit of lumber and fix the wall up. But
yeah, hey. Considering all the lumber he got from Mr. Hansen, I guess maybe it was insulation or something. I don't know.
I don't think so. Maybe. All right.
But it's very telling that it's all in Carrie's room.
And above the front door.
Yeah. Like, whatever.
All right, here we go.
Ma's going with me.
Charles?
Well, now, hold on. It's a free trip. We're never going to get a chance like this again.
Oh, Pa, how wonderful.
It's true.
You bet.
It sure is. But what's a Grange?
Honey, that's an organization that does an awful lot of good for all the people that belong to it.
Which is practically every farm in the whole country.
Mary? Something bothering you?
You have a pun.
No, I'm fine.
Just that she's in love and miserable because she can't go to the dance with John.
It's not just the dance. I miss him so much. It's been so long.
He doesn't miss you.
Well, you just might be interested to know that the convention that your mom and I are going to is going to take place in Chicago.
Chicago?
Rub it in, that's Charles.
Right?
Then you'll see John.
Well, of course we will.
But you can tell me everything. Where he lives, how he looks, if he's changed
we'll
at all.
We'll tell you everything.
The shirt. The one I made him for Christmas. When he was supposed to come home. I was going to send it to him by mail. But
now you can take it to him in person.
Well, you don't have to get it now.
Well, there's so many things I want you to tell him. Things I can't fit in the letter. It'll be almost as if I was really there.
But not. It's pretty depressing. I mean, it is a little bit sad.
But you can see that little glint in Ma's eye.
Yes.
Oh, I need, it's time for me to step up and be, you know, unselfish Ma.
I don't think it's being selfish for her to go.
Unselfish.
No, no, but I'm saying I don't think it's. It's just being too much of a good person at this point.
Well, she has to be selfless. She's Ma.
That's it. Just, that's the word I was thinking of. Selfless.
Selfless. Yeah, just like when she shoved Pa's shirt underneath the Christmas tree skirt so she didn't ruin Mary's moment.
Yeah.
She got that whole selfless thing going.
So Ma tells Charles, you know, and has the whole story, just like you said. Spoiler alert. And no, I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
No, so we kind of saw that. Yeah, I mean, I think, especially when Charles is rubbing it in, yeah, of course we're going to see him.
Right.
Exactly. We're even going to chew this new thing called chewing gum.
Right. Exactly.
So Ma breaks the news to Mary.
Would you come down here, please?
Oh, you know, this is an interesting view. I don't know if they've ever shown this. I'm sure they have. The back of the fireplace.
Yeah.
And the stone.
Not too often.
Need some help?
It's a relatively well-built loft.
It's beautiful. Oh, I remember the first time I wore it. I was about your age. Your Pa and I were not yet married.
Were you 6 feet tall then, too?
Right.
What are you talking about? I mean, it seems like it would fit her now.
It's strange.
Yeah. We even knew each other. He was so handsome.
Not anymore.
And I was so young.
Now he looks like a catcher's mitt. He smells like...
This is before he started going to fake tanning booths.
Yes.
He and Father were standing by the fireplace talking.
We've all had this moment with our, I guess, grandparents or something where it's like, oh my God. Get it out already. Go on with your story. Jeez.
Oh, I love this scene. I think Karen's acting in this particular scene is just impeccable. Right, the way that...
I'll play the rest of it.
I love it.
Wearing this dress. And he looked at me and said, Carolyn, you are the prettiest thing this side of heaven.
That wasn't Charles.
Spring dance. May, I think. He brought me cornflowers from the meadow and I put them in my hair. Oh, I fell in love with him that moment. And I've loved him ever since. I kept it tucked away in the trunk all these years, keeping it nice. Saving it for something really special. Maybe you should try it on, see if it needs any adjusting.
But why are you giving it to me?
You're going to need something nice for the cotillion. Well, don't just stand there. We've got a lot of work to do before you and your Pa go to Chicago.
Oh, Ma. Ma, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, I just think, and of course nobody can see it because they're listening to a podcast, but I just really love her. I just really love and appreciate her acting in that scene. She just looks completely believable that she's going back in her mind, memory down memory lane, and how she just worships Charles and blah, blah, blah. It's just a really strong scene for me.
But yeah, we get to see a train, which I think is really nice. We get to see,
we do,
and we start to see that the Grange, I guess, society, I'm not really sure what we call that, is actually throwing more money towards Charles than what we initially thought. And this actually would have been very nice for Caroline to have experienced, in my
opinion. I know it. The fancy compartment and all that stuff and the lunch.
And the room. But here's the beginning of how fancy of a time that we can expect.
Yeah.
Your lunch, sir.
Oh, hold on. I didn't order any lunch.
Oh, it's all taken care of. Roast beef, green peas and rolls, cauliflower, and blueberry pie for dessert.
Hey, well, it's all very nice, but who...
Just following my order, sir. Enjoy your meal.
I don't know what's going on here. Will you look at that?
But what about my sandwiches?
Look, if your ma could see that, I don't think she'd mind.
Throw them out the window, Mary.
Chunk them, bird food.
So yeah, they have roast beef and they have all types of good stuff, which is pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah, and for some reason in this, they clipped out the scene where they had sat in the seats first, and then the conductor said, oh, wait a minute, dude, you need to come back here to this hoity-toity compartment. So I don't know why they cut that scene.
Oh, but really? There's a missing scene.
Yeah, there's like, oh, you know, I've got every one of these scenes memorized in my head. But yeah, they come into the train, they just sit down in regular chairs, and the conductor looks at their tickets and goes, oh, you're Charles Ingalls or whatever. You need to follow me, and then leads them into that hoity-toity compartment. And Charles protests and then stops protesting, and then they bring him the hoity-toity lunch.
Interestingly enough, I mean, this is a very long episode to begin with. So it's kind of interesting that they would have cut that out.
I know.
So we got our first views of Chicago. We get the fountain, which seems to take up 80% of the entire city.
Right. And the lady with the dog with the little coat on, and Charles being a dumb farmer when the doorman says, Matt, are those your bags, sir? And he's like, of course they're my bags, and picks them up himself instead of letting the doorman do it. It's just like, oh, your small town is showing, dude.
But this little dog I like. This reminds me of my dog.
Yeah, I like the dog too.
And I have that same dress that the woman's wearing. So
you do. So you go out like that. Oh, yes. All righty. Learning all kinds of new things about you, Mark. Yes, yes.
So here we go. A little bit of On the Streets of Chicago.
No.
Your baggage, sir.
Hers is my baggage. What do you think? Come on, honey.
Thanks a lot, Sergeant Pepper.
Right.
He gives him
another
a look.
Farmer.
Yeah, country pretty girls. Much.
Mm-hmm. This interior looks amazing, you know?
Yes.
Good afternoon, sir. May I help you?
Yeah, I'd like two rooms, please.
You would sign the register, sir.
All right.
Ah, yes, Mr. Ingalls. Mr. Charles Ingalls, Walnut Grove, with the Grange, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
We've been holding your rooms for you, sir. Front?
Just a minute. I didn't make a reservation.
A reservation is not required. Your accommodations are paid in full. 232.
Ouch. Nothing's ever been paid in full for this guy.
Right.
Caroline would have walked in there and like, oh my goodness, Caroline, I remember you when you were a little girl here.
Exactly.
So here we go. We're on the streets again, and everybody's so happy, and Mary recognizes a friendly face.
Oh.
And I thought he was going to get hit by a wagon or something.
That's a later episode.
Well, it's the investigation of it, yeah.
Oh, I can't believe it. What are you doing here?
Get a room.
Right.
Mr. Ingalls, hello.
Nice to see you again, John.
Nice to see you, sir.
If you ever hug my girl and my daughter like that again, I'll break your nose.
Right. Sorry I felt up your daughter.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Sanderson, aren't you supposed to be doing that music festival article?
Mr. Hancock, this is Mary and Charles Ingalls.
Well, I'll be. How do you do, Mr. Ingalls?
Mr. Hancock?
Mary, I feel like I've known you folks for years. What brings you to Chicago?
I came to see John.
Oh, naturally. You're right, John. She's lovely.
I'm here representing my district for the Grange Convention, which reminds me I really should be on my way. Mr. Hancock, it was a pleasure to meet you. Maybe we can talk again sometime. John, you take Mary back to the hotel, right?
Of course, sir.
Good to see you again.
I have an idea. Mr. Ingalls, why don't you and your daughter join me for dinner tonight? You too, John, of course.
Could we, Pa?
It's very kind of you. We'd appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Hancock.
Fletcher,
Fletcher, I really should be going. If you could just point me in the right direction.
I'll do better than that. I'm heading in the same way.
Appreciate it. John, we'll see you tonight.
Is your first trip to Chicago, Charles?
Yes, it is.
Well, I think you'll like it if you get a chance to look around.
Oh, I have missed you, John.
And I've missed you.
Oh, I almost forgot. This is for you. I hope you like it.
It's from you. I'll like it.
It smells
hey,
like brisket.
Where I work.
It's a pound of bacon.
A rasher. Remember,
a
rasher of bacon?
Yeah, rasher bacon.
Harriet.
Jeez. From Mrs. Olson.
Right. Perhaps a nice rasher of bacon.
Harriet should have been in
Garvey.
This. Harriet should have been in this episode saying, oh, going to Chicago. You know? when I was a girl, I went to Chicago as well.
That's right. Like the episode where they go to their class reunion and Dylan Hyde, the guy that is crushing on Carolyn, and Harriet's just chomping at the bit to find out.
I still think that if this is a set, it's from some other production. I mean, it's just too elaborate for them to throw together for just this episode.
I know. I try not to think of them as being sets because it's almost, I hate that I know that reality. And kind of like once you know it, you can't go home again. I try not to think of them as sets every time I see them in the schoolhouse or the mercantile. It's like, no, I want it to all be real. So, you know, I try not to focus on that, but you're right. The hotel room they stay in, well, it's not a room, it's a suite. It's
yes.
like that, that had to be. From some other show. Surely they didn't put all that together just for this one episode.
Yeah, I mean, this could also be Italy, like, in a certain time, or it could be a mansion of some sort.
Right.
It's hard to say. But here we go. Mary and John basically walking around Chicago, and John buys her something that she's never going to forget.
Like a park next to it. It's really amazing.
Really?
Also, we have a
two
woman.
Of these, please.
We have a woman walking with this kind of wicker baby carriage thing.
Uh-huh.
Bizarre looking. Just so bizarre looking. Like, it almost looks like it might be Asian or something. Like, it's
right.
Really, really. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, but it's probably a real prop, though. I mean,
it's
true to the period.
It's just, I've
weird.
Never seen anything like it. Yeah.
Here you go. Thank you. Here.
What is it?
It's called chewing gum. They just started making it a couple of years ago.
What do you do with it?
Well, like it says, you chew it.
Oh.
But don't swallow it.
Why not? Is it poisonous?
Of course not, but it's chewing gum, not eating gum. Anyway, it's delicious. Go on.
Well, it is good. I'll take some back to Laura. She'll love it.
Now, bubblegum. All right. Now we have to talk about bubblegum for a moment.
Yeah. Now, and Mary doing an impersonation of Carrie in that one. Is it poisonous? Oh, come on.
So the flavor of bubblegum is one of those things where if you just Google it, it's a fascinating story. But the flavor of bubblegum really was not invented until like 1928.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It's really, it was actually created by a man named Walter Daimler. And I think I read this story a long time ago where he was just randomly mixing a number of different things, trying to find a brand new flavor. And he was trying to create a flavor of something completely having nothing to do with anything like bubblegum. And he accidentally stumbled upon this flavor.
Okay. But was did chewing gum still really, did chewing gum really exist
chewing
in 1887?
Yeah, chewing
gum. I mean,
gum,
1877.
Yeah, let me look up chewing gum itself because bubble gum is a whole different thing.
Yes.
But it says American Indians chewed resin. Rrr, savages. I'm just kidding. But the first commercial chewing gum was called the State of Maine Pure Spruce Gum.
Uh-huh.
And that was from 1848. So,
okay, yeah. So it's Yeah, but John says they just invented it a couple of years ago, and this is supposed to be 1877. So
John says a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's got poet's brain.
You know what? He also has other kind of brains because he has this beautiful girl waiting for him elsewhere in a dress that's yellow that I would name Lemon Verbena.
Yes, he's a player.
He really is. He's got a 3-piece suit on, and he even has like some cheap shirt on underneath.
That's the shirt Mary made for him, the plaid one.
Now let me ask, how did he know she was coming?
He didn't.
So how come he's even wearing that shirt?
She brought it to him.
Oh,
in the scene where they meet on the street.
Oh yeah, that's what was in this.
That's
it was
what
not
was
a rasher.
Remember, it was not a rasher of bacon. It was his shirt.
Right, because I remember the girl makes a reference to it, and it's like,
yes, she does. Where did you get that ridiculous shirt? You look like a farmer.
Right, it smells like poop.
It smells like a rasher of bacon.
I wish. So, who's the rest of that
Sanderson.
Scene?
Didn't expect to see you in town. Glad I caught you. I have your anthropology notes.
Oh, thanks. I almost forgot about them.
Who's the pretty lady?
Oh, Wesley Cox. This is Mary Ingalls.
Wesley wears bow ties.
I never forget such a sweet face.
Oh, I don't go to college.
This is Mary Ingalls from Walnut Grove.
Oh, the country girl.
Oh, snap.
John, don't you have an appointment at 11:30 with Miss Lawrence?
Oh, yeah. I'd completely forgotten. Mary, she's one of my professors. I'm going to have to take you back to the hotel.
No need for that. I'd be more than happy to escort Mary for you.
Would you?
I think that's a fine idea.
Oh, I'm sorry to have to rush off like this, Mary.
Will I see you after your appointment?
Yeah, at about 3. I have another class at 2. Thanks, Mary.
Thanks for helping me ditch her.
Right, John looks at him like, you saved my ass. I mean, he totally does.
So John's a pretty good-looking guy.
Oh, very good-looking guy.
So it wasn't too difficult for him to meet another girl.
No.
I'm in the interim, and here she is. She has quite a personality and a deep voice.
I was about to leave.
I'm sorry, the newspaper.
Yes, I know. I got my dress for the cotillion tomorrow night. It's beautiful. You'll pick me up at 7? Where in heaven's name did you get that silly shirt? You look like a farmer.
Oddly enough.
And John's got a big mouth. It's like his college buddy knows about Mary. His boss knows about, oh, it's Charles and Mary. I feel like I've known you forever. So John must have been doing a lot of talking.
Yeah, he's kind of an idiot. So we're back at the hotel, and Charles gets a knock on the door.
Oh, my.
Which is probably one of my favorite scenes in Little House on the Prairie in general. And what's even stranger about this is how inappropriate it looks. From her perspective.
Yeah.
Very silent scene.
Mr. Engel?
Yes.
I'm Angela.
I think you must have the wrong room.
This is...
Now, do you know who Geraldine Chaplin is, by any chance?
I don't.
She's an actress. I think she's still alive. But she was Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter, I believe.
Oh,
and
okay.
She looks just like this woman. Like she actually played Charlie Chaplin's mother in the movie Chaplin. But
oh, wow.
She's actually a really wonderful actress, was or is. It's terrible that I don't know. But this woman, I swear, I thought it was Geraldine Chaplin. I was like, oh, but it's not. I just didn't know if you know who she was.
No, I don't.
But she's the type of person that was born rich and probably died rich.
You're 32, isn't it? And you're Charlie Ingalls with the brain?
Charlie.
Oh, hi, honey.
Hi, honey.
Kind of young, isn't she?
Well, that's my daughter.
Sure it is.
Oh.
Oh, who sent you here?
Hollister, silly. Who'd you think?
Who's Hollister?
Stanley Hollister with Railroad.
This is so funny.
I see. Well, I'm afraid there's been a mistake.
Okay, I get it. Shame, though.
I'm sorry for the inconvenience.
Bye, sweetie.
Yeah.
You take good care of your pa, you.
Right.
And Mary's like standing there with the body of a 12-year-old boy.
Right. It's just she's like, oh, it's a little house. I can't even go there.
Wait for Mary to go. She seemed nice.
I said they could have named this episode Charles and the Painted Lady.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's a hooker.
Charles in charge.
That's right.
But as we know, this is not the last time that Charles has dealings with hookers. I'm just kidding. Mark at walnutgrovecast.com.
Yeah, right. Almanzo had to deal with the hooker. Remember the hooker in He Loves Me, He Loves Me Not? Yeah. That was trying to get him to get the water off her back.
And also, didn't he date a hooker, the songwriter?
She wasn't a hooker. She was been. A nice girl.
She might have been. She might have been.
Christy was the one that was the witch. That snippy Christy.
So Charles has a conversation with John's boss because an article ran that basically went against a lot of the things that he believes in, I guess.
Well, Charles went to the Grange and there's more hookers and there's people making deals under the table. And then they write this squeaky clean article about, oh, it was a lovely evening and right. Blah, 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 blah. So Charles is hot.
Yes.
Or he gets hot.
Yeah. And and John's boss, who's a newspaper man, is fully admitting that, you know, sometimes I stretch the truth, maybe, you know, this or that. But for the most part, he says that he feels as though his product is solid or something along those lines. I mean, should I play some of that? I don't really know.
Okay. I mean, play a little bit.
All right.
Look, I know you weren't at the convention dinner last
night. Sent Blake Simmons, one of my best men.
I know we met. But when I read this article...
Oh, you trying to tell me how my reporter should write?
No, not how, what? I mean, it just never happened this way.
I'm not sure I understand you.
Much of the dinner last night was a nightmare. I mean, of drunken farmers, fancy women. But the worst part was the bargaining going on under the table. People making deals, bribes, and with railroaders. Look, Simmons was there. He heard every bit of it. And I read this article, I think the whole thing was a nightmare. There's nothing about it in here. I just thought you ought to know.
Like some?
No.
I'm aware of what went on, Charles. See, I have a responsibility to the Grangers.
What about your readers? Don't you owe them something?
Fake news.
The Grange is a respectable true, institution.
Oh, nobody believes that any more than I did.
Well, if I report it every time they play a few games here and there, I give them a bad name.
Well, what went on?
You see, I'm really just protecting people from hearing things that wouldn't do them any good to know.
No, my.
But you don't really believe that.
Look, Charles, I know what I print sometimes isn't the whole truth. But my advertisers, large organizations like the railroads, well, they keep me in business.
Right. Essentially, it's payola. And
yep. We come down to the money.
Well, I mean, and it does. And have you ever seen the movie Citizen Kane?
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that's about how the newspaper business also works and gives you another inner working. But it also, yep. I think, what he's saying here, and even you made a reference, I know you were doing it lightheartedly, but, you know, fake news, and it's one of these things that it... You know, it's an overused word these days, but at the same time, I think it's a very powerful sentiment. And New York Times, you know, for instance, the newspaper of record, fully endorses publicly that it will not always tell the entire truth by their credo, which is all the news that's fit to print, you know, and that's a matter of opinion, right? So it's really a strange thing, the newspapers. I think that this might have also been a little bit of Michael Landon's distaste with media at the time.
Yeah.
And with newspapers. And he was right. immoral to do a lot of the things, and he was really kind of railroaded, so to speak, in the tabloids of the day, and even tabloids now. He was on the cover of a tabloid just a week ago.
Yeah, so it's and I think I'd spoken about it in another podcast about how they sensationalize things because I work for the Salvation Army, and here in Houston, we closed down a shelter that had been there for like 35 years. That was a shelter I worked at, so we all transferred to another shelter. But the media came out just saying all this stuff, that there was a guy that had stayed there. There was a murder case a couple of years ago. A little boy had gotten murdered in that neighborhood, and they were trying to sensationalize it and say the guy that murdered the kid had stayed at that shelter, which he hadn't. And it was proven that he hadn't. It was proven that this guy had never stayed at that shelter. Because although most nonprofits cannot afford to do background checks, which we do not, but they do have to have a picture ID. So there's a very tight record kept of everybody that goes in and out of that building. The man was never there. And it was 2 years ago. Not that that makes it any less horrifying that this precious little boy was murdered. But sure. I'm just saying, because that shelter was closing, the media tried to stir it all up again. Ooh, this murderer stayed there. The best one was that they said, there is no information right now as to where all these men are going to go when the shelter closes down, like the Salvation Army was kicking them out on the street. And it's like, woman, you are so full of it. The guys that were in the drug reprogram were going to another place. Everybody had a place to go.
I think the Salvation Army is a very, very strong and very important part of. I think they don't get enough funding, of course. They don't get a lot of credit, but I think that they do a lot of really good stuff, like you're saying. Getting people, to get off of, this terrible path that they might have accidentally chosen or been forced into, or just, that they made bad choices. But I do think that they do a lot of good. But absolutely, people should really kind of look at the Salvation Army as, it's weird. Like, I don't feel like they get enough of the credit that they kind of used to. I don't know. Maybe there's just too many charities and not that it's really a charity. It's just there are too many charities and there's not enough of them that are doing anything nearly as much as that the Salvation Army does. Yeah. I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's just, it was just so ridiculous that this woman obviously, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, please, I'm rarely, if ever, ever, ever personally involved in something that's written in a newspaper. And so when you're closer to the story and you know the real story, you really don't get the gist of how the media twists it.
Also, who cares? I mean, even if it was true that the guy lived there, you can't control the actions of a man 24/7.
No, you absolutely can't. It's like we're providing a roof over their head so they don't have to sleep on the street at night. And wouldn't it be lovely if all nonprofits could afford whatever it is, $90 a pop or whatever for a background check? But they can't. There's no funding for that. So all we can do is demand a picture ID and keep our fingers crossed that somebody's not Ted Bundy.
Right. Instead of spending $90 on a background check, you can, supply somebody with like meals for a week.
Absolutely.
it's crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But all right, let's get back to the Granger. They're at the Cotillion. The Cotillion actually was happening. I didn't know if that was just maybe John lying, saying, "Oh, this is big party. I wish you could go.
Dig it in. Yeah. Grind it in." And the orchestra keeps playing the same song over and over.
I thought was interesting is some of the women seem to have small purses. And I just wasn't sure if that was something that was normal back in this period of time.
I don't know if it was either. I'll tell you the one woman that showed that I just kind of went, what? Was the woman that had the sleeveless dress. That was way too much skin. She hit the top of it was like a tank top. She had these little.
Yeah, I see her on the screen now.
Right. And I'm just like, oh, come on. In the 1870s, that's what hookers wore. Not
her whole outfit.
Formal, yeah.
Her whole outfit is fitting. And when I say fitting, I don't mean that it's suitable. I mean it's form-fitted. So,
yeah.
Not form-fitted, but you can, in the position she's in, it contours to her body, which is really just not something that was normal in the, you know, late 19th century.
Yeah, I think the whole sleeveless thing was like, slap a dress on her, we need extras.
And the gloves up to past the elbow. I don't know when that was. It seems like something that might have been either earlier or much later.
I don't know.
Yeah, but here we go.
I'm sorry to keep running up, but I have to cover the cotillion
that
for the paper.
Stupid paper is all you ever think about. You can't even keep your mind on where we're dancing.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you something. As soon as you have time to think about me for a change, let me know. Until then, I'd rather not dance in the shrubbery.
Oh, snap. She's mad enough to kill him.
Right. He's dancing her over in the bushes because John's friend is keeping Mary busy dancing so he can split himself between these two women. What breaks my heart is when John and Mary first start dancing in front of Charles, he's like, I want to see y'all dance, get out there. And they're dancing and she's like, I love you, John. And yes. Man, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah. It's like, I love you, John. That's nice.
Right?
Not even that's nice.
I know, just nothing. It's just like silence. I'm just like, poor Mary. Like,
thanks, Mary.
Yeah.
All right, so Charles is going to get a little bit mad here. He's, I think he had a couple.
Yeah.
And begin by asking, who is more familiar with the affairs of the farmers? The railroads with whom we have worked in the past? Or those bureaucrats in the state government? Now, in light of my conversations with various sources, I have excellent reason to believe that the railroads are willing to work with the Grange on this matter of shipping charges.
How much are they paying you to talk like that, O'Connell?
McConnell? Sounds like he's Irish, right?
Right.
I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Sir, you are out of order.
No, sir, I am not.
Oh.
Give him hell, Charles.
Because what I have to say is important because nobody's paying me to say it.
Damn right.
And I've been proud to be a member of the Grange. I was honored when I was asked to represent my district here at the convention.
There's actually a part missing here because he starts talking about how he's really happy to have gotten all this free stuff. And he's like, the roast beef was delicious and tender. And the cauliflower. I've never had cauliflower that was steamed so well.
And the hooker was beautiful, but I'm married.
She had paint on her face.
This isn't the Grange that I knew. This isn't the close-knit rural organization that it used to be.
Mm-mm.
Because it's been corrupted by the railroads and the power of the big city.
Sir, and that is a...
You've been corrupted by inside-out houses.
That's right.
Libelous statement.
Well, then sue me.
You can't.
Go on, O'Connell, sue me. My farm's worth about $100. What's $100 to you, O'Connell? It's nothing. Well, it means a lot to me, and I'd still rather lose my farm than lose my honor.
Mr. Chairman, these heroics are wasting this convention's time.
I agree with Mr. O'Connell, Mr. Chairman.
There's McConnell.
I'm sure it is a waste of this convention's time. I mean, why waste your time being honest when you can make so much more money by being dishonest?
Are you talking like a fool?
Well, of course I'm a fool. I'm just a dumb farmer, O'Connell. A stupid, dumb farmer. Well, I got news for you and for the railroad. I didn't come to Chicago on a load of hay. Now, I don't care how the rest of you are voting tonight. But this dumb farmer is going to vote yes on state regulation. And I don't care what it costs.
Now, gentlemen, I'll just...
Go get him, Charles.
I thought it was McConnell at first, but yeah, it's O'Connell.
Ah.
It's John
Milford. I thought it was McConnell, too. Okay.
John Milford, you might know from... he's been in a lot of different movies. I was like, where do I know him from? He's a character actor. But he was in, like, everything. Like, Knight Rider and... But one of the things where I kind of know him from is a TV show called Enos. Do you remember
Enos? Yeah. That title sounds really familiar to me. I never watched it, but so I know the title.
Enos, he played Captain Dempsey, and he was in the 18 episodes that existed of Enos. Enos was a spinoff from Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Now I know. Exactly, that's all you had to say. It was like, oh yeah.
And it's just really kind of funny. I also remember him from I'm looking here. I kind of remember him from a couple of these different things, but for the most part, I think it was Enos that I really kind of recognized him from. So it's kind of funny.
You know what it makes me think of? It's like Susan Sukman McRae. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
God bless America. That woman not only was busy, but when you think about the talent of the actors that came in, the character actors and stuff, I mean, she had it going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, with all the people that, and certainly Michael Landon was involved in all the main characters, you know, Laura, Mary, Carolyn, et cetera. And I know that they all read for him before that final choice was made. But I imagine as the series went on that perhaps Susan alone, we know that Mike was a control freak. I don't know how control freaky he was about picking character actors just for little bit parts and stuff, but it's just really making me appreciate.
I think they made such wonderful choices for even the roles that were not like major, like we'll never see this particular character again.
Right. But just so perfect for the role, and bless her heart, I'm just for thinking about her, because I wonder, the last time I saw a picture of her, she was in a wheelchair, and of course we know Kent McRae, her beloved husband, passed away not too long ago, so I hope she's surrounded by friends and family, and she's doing well.
Now, have you ever met anyone named Enos?
Now let me think, oh, you know what?
Dennis, but you know. Here's the thing that's weird is O'Connell's character's name is Enos. And he was on a show called Enos.
Well,
bizarre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, John Milford. I wonder if you had something to do with this.
Well, I don't know.
Just a dumb coincidence.
I do know.
But Rodimus Pera, I just noticed, he just had a birthday just 3 days ago.
He's a birthday boy.
Yeah, that makes him, I guess, 58 years old.
Oh, really? Okay, he's right there with me.
Yeah, there
you
go.
I'll be 58 this year.
Yeah, you're a spring chicken compared to Rodimus.
I am. Mm-hmm.
Rodimus is rad.
Yeah, my feathers are falling out a little bit.
Well, that's what it's for, right? That's if they don't fall out, then something's wrong.
That's right. I had plastic surgery. There and we know how bad plastic surgery looks.
Oh no. So
no.
We have so Charles has this big old, you know, outburst.
He stomps out of the Grange meeting and goes to the dance to pick up Mary since John has to leave early to get that article out.
And Charles walks in at a very strange moment.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a bad evening, young man, and right now I'm about as angry as I've ever been in my life. I know, sir.
Punch him, Charles. Punch him.
Wait, what did he see him doing? Why did I just skip over that?
Well, Charles walks out onto the terrace, and he sees John cleaning his date's tonsils. They're out on the terrace.
In public.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you know. What kind of game are you playing? It's not a game, sir. I didn't know you and Mary were coming. Oh, am I supposed to understand that?
Lame.
You're supposed to be engaged to my daughter. Do you love her? I care for her deeply. I asked you if you're in love with my daughter.
Get him, Charles.
Can I get the ring back?
No, sir.
I'm sorry, what? What did you say?
I said, get him, Charles.
It's like, I didn't quite catch that. If you could just say it again.
No, sir.
Punch him right in the throat, Charles.
Right.
She's blind.
How long ago?
I'm not sure.
Ever since she developed this really bad breath.
That's right.
When you're far apart, it's easy to avoid knowing the truth. But seeing her again, I knew. And I did plan to tell her.
When?
After. In the letter when she got back to Walnut Grove.
Nope.
When she got back to Walnut Grove, and I'm supposed to understand that, too. I'm a writer. The words come easier on paper. When you first told my daughter you loved her, did you write her a letter about it?
There you go.
This is different. I can't face her. John Mary has a right to hear it from you.
Yes, she does.
There's a right to tell you how she feels.
I disagree. I think it's okay to be a weakling. It's okay. So Charles forces him to break his daughter's heart.
Yeah, I'm so glad that they didn't film that scene, because I think considering that Melissa wasn't real crazy about, I can never pronounce his name, so I'm just going to call him John.
Like Rodimus.
Theronymous, yeah. Considering that there was no chemistry between them, I can't imagine. Well, Mary was a really great actress too. I mean, she's able to do this next scene with Charles, but I think her and John together, I'm so glad we didn't have to have the scene where I'm in love with another woman.
Where he says something along the lines of, and look, we can like totally write letters to each other and like be friends. Totally.
It would have been like the scene in Tootsie when Dustin Hoffman told Sandy that he was in love with another woman and she was screaming.
I never saw Tootsie, actually.
You have never seen that movie? Oh my God, it's great. Okay, don't get me started.
All right.
Anyway, go ahead.
So here we go.
Letters. I believe them.
I know you did. Sometimes things happen when there's a lot of distance between people.
That's what he said.
Maybe he just wrote you the things that he thought you wanted to hear.
But I feel the same, Pa. I love John.
But he's not the same, darling. He's changed. He's different. He's a city boy now. He has different needs.
I could learn to be what he wants.
His internet.
I could change too.
Oh, now hold on. Change is not always for the better. There's only one thing in this world you can do better than anybody else.
What?
It's not seeing.
Stop.
Just be yourself.
Being yourself hurts too much.
If you didn't feel a little of the pain of sorrow, how would you know how good it felt to be happy?
I think I'll ever be happy again.
Oh, yes, you will. I know you don't believe that now, but you wait and see. One of these days, this will be over and forgotten. You meet a new beau and you fall in love again.
No, I won't. Love is too painful.
Come on.
Nothing makes sense anymore.
Let's order room service.
Why don't we go home?
Get you some of that gum.
I just don't think you and I belong here.
Why? Because things are nice?
Poor Mary. He should have said, hey, Linwood Boomer's in your future, and he's totally hotter than John, so don't worry about it. Of course, you're going to have to go blind first, but hey.
But he will be too. So, but of course, right. He'll get his sight back and then rub it
out. But I love that scene. That's the kind of scene where if you didn't have a real tender dad like I did not, that you just kind of ate it with a spoon. It's just kind of like, oh, he just says the perfect thing, of course, because it's written in the script. And yeah.
Well, I'm sure Charles, I'm sure Michael Landon wishes he had a father that compassionate as well, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what this was all about anyway, but yeah,
this is so sweet.
I think we were, as parents, we learned a lesson there on the right way to deal with a situation like that.
Absolutely.
Thankfully, I did not have any daughters.
I know. And child, you don't know how lucky you are. My daughter is still a drama queen, and she's going to be, what, 29 this year or 30 or whatever. Oh, my God.
And, well, I'm fine with, you know, if I did, you know, it would have been fine. It's just a matter of I wouldn't be comfortable. So we're at a moment where probably one of the strangest Easter eggs to ever happen in the universe of Little House on the Prairie. Very few people know this. I think people see this scene, they're like, I know him, but I don't know how I know this redheaded kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, he has red hair. Who else has red hair? Is he from Happy Days? No. Well, you know, what else was there?
And well, maybe because when he was on the
together,
show,
right?
Maybe because the show that he was on, they made him dye his hair dark brown in the beginning.
Yes, and so that's true.
So he matched the other actors.
So I'm going to play the scene, then we'll explain why this is such a pivotal, important scene when it comes to the history and appreciation of classic television.
Yes.
Things like this didn't happen. I'm sorry. It just didn't happen enough. There were not enough crossovers. This is 1977.
Yep.
And you're having, you know, this is like Back to the Future 3 right here.
This is like really
time traveling, breaking through dimensions to get to this. you break down walls to get here.
That's
all right,
right.
So I'm going to play this.
Would you like a sandwich?
No, thanks.
Go ahead. My Aunt Polly made them for me. She always
Aunt
fixes
Polly.
More than enough.
Lord.
Thanks.
My Aunt Alice.
It's a good idea.
Right.
You'll be needing it. It's going to be a long trip. Where are you headed? I'm going to Poplar Point myself. Bet you never heard of it.
Well, sure I have. It's only about a half an hour from my house.
Is that right? Excuse my manners. My name's Patrick. What's yours?
Mary. Mary Ingalls.
Where are you from?
Walnut Grove.
Walnut Grove. That's where I'll be going to school. There isn't one in Poplar Point.
Oh, you'll really like it. Miss Beetle's a really good teacher.
Not too tough?
Not if you do your homework.
Then I'm in trouble.
So, we never see this character again, unfortunately.
And we never see Patrick again.
Why is it? I mean, how incredible would it have been? And you can mention who this particular character is, what his real name is.
It's Bobby Brady, Mike Luckinland from The Brady Bunch.
Yes, The Brady Bunch. And, you know, this is basically how most people first saw or remember Mary, right? From, I think, 1969, yes. I want to say.
She was Millicent, his girlfriend
thought
had given him the mumps. Yes.
And when they
That was
kiss.
Her very first acting job. She did a lot of commercials. But that episode of The Brady Bunch, I just watched a two or three part interview with Melissa Sue Anderson, just because I'm trying to get over my distaste of her. And I really wanted to see what she had to say. And she was saying that The Brady Bunch, that was her very first acting role other than the commercials and things that she did.
Now, another thing that is so important about this particular kiss from The Brady Bunch is that it is the only time in the entire series that a Brady child kisses a member of the opposite sex.
Skyrockets.
Yes. And I think that it's really cool. This is a little bit of an Easter egg that I didn't know about until years later. But I think it's a really cool little thing. That actually came out in 1973, actually. So, October 5th, 1973 was the Brady episode.
Right. So, and so 4 years later, oh my goodness, and they're so different. So she must have been 10 in that episode.
Yeah, and I was 8 months old.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But I was always a big fan of Little House on the Prairie, and it's a real shame because I think Michael Luckinland was a pretty good actor. He mm-hmm. didn't do very much. I think listed here, oh wow, look at this, a pre-production for our very Brady renovation. I hope not.
Oh, yeah, they're redoing the house. Lance Bass wanted to buy it, but he ended up losing out on it. But I think they're going to do a whole a whole program on the DIY network or something about them bringing that house on the inside to look like the old Brady Bunch house.
You know, but, you know, the exterior was filmed, you know, it was separate. Like that, the interiors were not even the same. No,
yeah, I've seen the inside of the real Brady house. It looks nothing like the set, but apparently they're going to try to make it look like the set they had all there on YouTube. You can see videos of all the Brady kids, which is really freaky because even Eve Plum is participating in this. And she separated herself from the Brady Bunch.
She's
just
off the
like
juice
Jonathan
for the week.
Gilbert. Yeah, right. No, just like Jonathan Gilbert, we don't know where he is. Eve Plum was the same way, but apparently she's a very accomplished artist.
Oh,
she's
I'm just kidding around. But I mean, I think that I always liked the Brady Bunch. I always thought that the house was like so cool. I think there are a few inconsistencies with the house. For instance, I think you can, if you were to go by the episodes, you know, at some point you could always look outside of everyone's bedroom and get the same exact view.
Right. And there's no glass in the sliding glass door.
Oh, was there? Is that a thing?
No, too? there's no glass in the sliding glass door.
So weird.
I know. I love the Brady Bunch and I love the movies. I'm so glad they made them satires. I think they are hilarious, especially the second one. It's just the chick that played Marcia did Marcia better than Marcia. I mean, it's just, as I scream.
Well, this was a fun episode. It looks as though Mary's going to be able to meet other people and move on.
Yes.
And, all right. Well, Susan, thank you very much for getting together for this episode of Water
Growthcast. You're welcome, dear. It was awesome as always.
If you enjoy this episode, go over to patreon.com/WaterGrowthcast and throw us a couple bucks.
Yes.
You don't have to contribute for the rest of your life or anything. It's just a matter of, you know, if you can't afford it and you do appreciate this. And I also do want to mention that, you know, I've kind of gone back and forth with it. And I think what I'm going to do is permanently make every episode just publicly available to everyone. So I'm still kind of going back and forth because if I can maintain X amount of dollars per month that's being contributed, then I don't see why I shouldn't be able to do that just publicly.
Right.
So yeah.
I gotcha.
Anyway, so I'm gonna play us out and just stay on the line, please.
Alrighty. Comes that brain splitting note.
Ridiculous.
Oh.